We have Barbara Leonard, president of the Portland chapter of the Lynx. We have Professor Felicia Williams, Portland State University Black Studies Department. We have Barbara Rice, Portland Water Bureau, coordinator of today's proclamation, and other special guests. And I would like to read the proclamation. We've got an exhibit on Pacific, but before I do that, we have an exhibit on February 11th through March 11th on Pacific Northwest Black Pioneers, brought to us by the Lynx. And the reception will be Thursday after work, February 17th. On Wednesday, February 23rd, we have a program called History, Hope, and Harmony, a tribute to Portland's great jazz heritage, honoring our city's jazz elders with music, film, photos, and special guest speaker, Grammy-nominated musician and community ambassador for the Portland Jazz Festival, native Portlander Esperanza Spalding. Before us, we have Donnie Adair and Tim Hall and Professor Williams?
Karen Hansen.
Oh, Karen Hansen, who are all the co-chairs and leaders in putting together the Black History Month. I'm going to read the proclamation, then ask you all to say a few words, if you would. Whereas the month of February is officially celebrated in Portland as Black History Month, and whereas in 1976, Black History Month was formally adopted to honor and affirm the importance of Black history throughout America dating back hundreds of years, and whereas Black History Month is a time for all Oregonians and all Portlanders to remember African-American history, particularly the contributions of Roscoe Lee Dixon in 1850, Beatrice Morrow Kennedy in 1929, Jess Stahl in 1915, just a few of the citizens who helped pave the way to advance civil rights, fortify communities and families, and educate and employ other African-Americans. And whereas with dedication and hard work, the African-American citizens of Portland have uplifted and transformed our communities, and whereas the history of the city of Portland has been made richer from the economic, cultural, and political contributions of African-Americans, their invaluable achievements in business, education, and the arts deserve recognition, and whereas during Black History Month and beyond, all Americans are asked to be accountable to themselves, their family, their neighbors, and community to continue efforts towards the freedom, justice, and equality of opportunity for all Americans. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim February 2011 to be Black History Month. Congratulations. Mr. Adair, do you want to?
Yes, I'll start. I'm Donnie Adair, Commissioners with the Bureau of Human Resources, Diversity Development Office, and co-chair of the Committee for Black History Month for about the last 5 or 6 years. It's been my pleasure to be a co-chair with Karen over that period of time and also work with Tim, who is our president of the City African American Network and also a board member of the Diverse Empowered Employees of Portland. What I want to do is just talk a little bit about what we are doing, and Karen's going to talk about why, and Tim is going to focus on some particular activities that he's put together that we think will broaden our program this year. City of Portland employees, community organizations, and community activists, as well as educators, have joined together this year. We're really happy to have the Lynx as part of our Black History Month program this year and bringing that regional Black History exhibit with Oregon, Washington, and Alaska Black Pioneers is going to be absolutely wonderful from the 11th of February through the 11th of March. It'll be right here in City Hall. And so you're going to see a lot more school kids and others coming through the building to see that information. And that's one of our goals, was to really reach out to the community. The other was to have for our employees some additional venues outside downtown. And through our work with and generosity of BES, we're going to be out at the water treatment plant, Columbia Boulevard, and also a water pollution control at their conference center with lectures and films and programs so that we give a chance for all of our employees out in the field to get these very important and fun activities around Black history. And this is information that will help them in their work. Also, this year we're expanding really what we started last year in focusing on our local history with Vanport and looking at other communities such as Giles Lake Courts, which will, Tim will talk about in a little bit. But again, our focus is on local history and regional history and bringing that to life, and that's been helpful to our employees. So I'll give it over to Karen.
Hi, I'm Karen Hansen. I'm an engineer with the Bureau of Environmental Services. First, I'd like to express my gratitude for the opportunity to be involved in this type of celebration of Black history. We have been doing this for, I think, 5 years, Donnie.
Yeah.
And we've really felt well supported by the city, and there's been wonderful contributions from various offices and bureaus for all of our events, so thank you very much for that. My involvement has centered around the jazz concert that begins our events each year. We've highlighted the best of the best in local jazz. If you'll recall, Daryl Grant, Devin Phillips, Reggie Houston, and thank you for the announcement this year. We're bringing the legendary Thera Memory. He's just a local hero to so many of us. We often say that the jazz concert is the kickoff event for the month because it gives us an opportunity to announce all that's happening and kind of get people on board and aware. But really, it's more than that. Jazz is a uniquely American art form, and its roots truly are a reflection of African American experience. So we begin the month with jazz as ceremony because, number one, it's welcoming. It is also radically honest. And it expresses emotions that are complex, and therefore it's real. And it instills courage. So this is a tone that we wish to set for the employees and for the public for a month-long focus on our history, which shows the best of us and the worst of us, but ultimately demonstrates our continuous commitment to building community. So that's why we start with jazz. And I'm pleased this year that we're also, at the end of the month, we have a new event, which the mayor has referenced. We are celebrating the history of jazz here in Portland. And we have Esperanza Spalding, which I'm so excited about. She's such an inspiration. She's just an amazing musician. And she actually was one of Thera Memory's students. So she is truly a product of Portland education and Portland heart and spirit. So we'll look forward to that, too. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Tim Hall. I do Senior Public Outreach Coordinator for the Portland Water Bureau. I'm also the chair of the African American Network. Mayor Adams, members of the council, my friends. Before World War II, there were just over 2,000 African Americans living in Portland, most of them in an area called South Albina. During the war, the need for workers for the shipyards caused Henry Kaiser to actually recruit both Black and white workers to come to Portland from all over the country. More than 15,000 to 18,000 African Americans responded to the support to support the war effort. Once in Portland, Black workers settled on Kaiser and government housing, where in most cases the races mixed in schools and churches, and they staffed police and fire departments. These were early models for integration before it was law. These neighborhoods were a section of Giles Lake Court, Fairview Homes, and Vanport City. Vanport was once the second largest city in the United in Oregon. They're all gone now, including South Albina, a race from Portland because of urban renewal, industrial development, and there was a flood. Next Wednesday, February 9th, the City African American Network, joined by the Portland Water Bureau, will host an exhibit to remember these neighborhoods and their people. Ed Washington, the former Metro Councilor, will speak of the day of his days in both Vanport and Giles Lake. We hope that others will come and share their stories as well. We are honored that you, Mayor Adams, will attend and welcome our guests, and we thank you. I also invite all the commissioners to stop by because it's going to be a wonderful exhibit. Thanks to our other sponsors, Kaiser Permanente and Portland State University, this event is free. The City African American Network has also organized another college recruitment fair at City Hall that will be next Thursday, February 10th. More than 100 students from local high school will have an opportunity to talk to admissions representatives and recruiters from six of Oregon's top colleges. The student transportation is actually paid for by Oregon State University and the U of O. We thank you for your support of Black History Month and also for the hard and difficult work you do for the city of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
I just want to thank all of you again. Each one of your offices made a contribution to our programs. We want to thank Carrie Clark in the mayor's office, the art and culture director, who's been most helpful in helping us bridge the activities with the art community, and as well as all of the sponsors that we've listed in your information. And all of our committee members deserve praise because this is truly a group success. It's not just a few individuals, but we have a very large, active working committee of people from your bureaus.
Donnie, could I also just observe that since this is Black History Month, there's a significant new book coming out published by Oregon State University Press, which we should acknowledge, and that is the memoirs of my former state senator, Abel Gordley.
Okay.
And she has a great story to tell, and that book will be available, I understand, on Amazon starting shortly.
Well, I will purchase it because she's your friend and mine.
Yeah. My wife might have been
who's
a co-editor. My wife might have been an editor, but I don't want to. All the proceeds go to Abel, so.
Thank you for
thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. So that takes us to the 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 107?
Appoint Andre Pruitt and Steve Yarosh and reappoint Michael Bingham and Dr. Rochelle Silver to the Citizen Review Committee Advisory Body to the Auditor's Independent Police Review Division.
Good morning, Commissioners. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, City Auditor, here to briefly introduce two new members of the CRC, the Citizen Review Committee, for your appointment, and two returning members. The new members are Andre Pruitt. He is currently Clinical Supervisor of the Oregon Health Science University Avell Gordley Center for Healing, an outpatient mental health and addictions program. He has provided diversity trainings and lectures nationally, and we're very pleased to have him be part of this very important committee. Our second new committee member is Steve Yarosh. He's an attorney and small business owner. He has substantial experience handling claims alleging police misconduct and civil rights violations, and he's worked extensively on both sides of that issue. First as a plaintiff's attorney in Chicago, where he successfully represented clients in cases alleging police misconduct, and later as a city attorney, where he successfully defended individual officers in cases alleging misconduct. So we're also very pleased to have Mr. Yarosh be a member of this very important city committee. And then returning to the Citizen Review Committee, we have Michael Bingham. He's a retired Port of Portland police lieutenant. He also volunteers with low-income housing residents, the homeless community, special needs individuals, and drug treatment programs. He was initially appointed in 2005, and he's been the chair since 2009. And we are happy to welcome back Michael to his chairmanship and to this committee. And finally, a returning member, Dr. Rochelle Silver, served as chief psychologist for the Damish State Hospital and for the Oregon State Hospital. Currently, Dr. Silver provides consultation and supervision to Oregon licensed psychologists. She also volunteers with several organizations, tutoring students with the SMART program, teaching English as a second language, and acting as a certified long-term ombudsman for the state of Oregon. And we are very happy to have Dr. Silva returning to this committee. So without further ado, I will ask the new members and the returning members to come up and introduce themselves to you a little more formally. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome. Would you like to begin?
Block moves. You have to move the microphone, but the whole block moves.
Oh, why don't you sit here? Sit right here. Make it easy. Thank you. I'm Steve Yarosh. I'm very pleased to be here, and I'm looking forward to service on the committee. I have some experience in this area on both sides. And my interest in serving is to give back to the city. I have a 6-year-old son. My family lives here. We plan to stay in Portland our whole lives. I think that there is probably no other branch of government more important in fostering a good relationship among the citizens than the relationship between the police and the people. And I think CRC is in a unique position to really foster that relationship, and I look forward to being part of that.
Thank you.
Mike Bigham, I'm the chair of the Citizen Review Committee, and it's a pleasure to be back with you again. I'd like to thank the commission for your commitment to civilian oversight of police and police reform, and for your support of the CRC and the IPR through the last several years. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Silver, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to serve on the Citizens Review Committee. I've learned a lot in the last 2 years about the police and its relationship with citizens in the community, and my purpose here is to continue to work toward an ever better relationship between those two entities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, and my name is Andre Pruitt, and I am the clinical supervisor of the Grail Gorley Center for Healing. And my purpose here is to continue the bridging between the police department and the citizen of Portland. I should say, even though the police are also citizens for everybody in our community. Part of the reason why I'm also doing this is I'm on Portland, Oregonian as well, and an activist, come from an activist family who's also been very involved in throughout the city of Portland, throughout the state of Oregon. So this is my way of giving back and holding my grandfather's tradition of giving back to the community.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this resolution?
We had Dan Handelman sign up.
All right. Thank you all. You can return to your seats. Mr. Handelman.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and we have been following, as you know, the Citizen Review Committee from before the time that it was created back in 2001. And we are very careful to review the applications of all the people who are going to be gone. And I know that since the ordinance requires you to do so, too, that you've had the chance to review these applications as well. We have no immediate concerns about the people who are being proposed for appointment today. What I would like to point out is that the two new members who I've not met before are seem to be the kind of ideal candidates that you would want on the CRC, which is that they have both, especially Mr. Pruitt, he didn't say this in his testimony or in his biography, but they both have experience on both, as they say, on both sides. And Mr. Pruitt relates in his application stories about having friends in the police bureau, but also having been he felt mistreated by police officers. And I think that we've had members like that in the past, and it's been a very valuable point of view. And I think it's probably something the police should appreciate as well. It's interesting that the ordinance calls for these members to be appointed for 2 years, and if their term changes, that they will be appointed for however long the term will be. This is just a kind of a reminder to all of you that the stakeholder report came out in early December and that the Citizen Review Committee, no changes were made to the Citizen Review Committee last March, and everybody on the Citizen Review Committee, I think, is waiting for expanding their abilities and powers and duties and perhaps the length of their terms. So I'm hoping that that will come back before council sooner rather than later. And I guess finally, the outreach for this, I know there was a lot of outreach done, and they had a limited pool of applicants. But at this point, Ms. Silver is now the last remaining female member of the Citizen Review Committee, and we have not had a Latino member of the Citizen Review Committee for 6 years or more. And one way to ensure a more diverse pool, perhaps, would be to create a larger Citizen Review Committee and do more outreach into the communities that aren't represented on the board. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sue, can you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Thank you all for serving, and thank you especially to Dr. Silver for being my liaison. It's really been very, very helpful to get ongoing updates, and thank you to Chair Bingham for your ongoing service. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you for your service. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you very much to the continuing members, and welcome for our new members. Sounds like a great, great additions to the CRC. Thank you. Aye.
Leonard.
I do appreciate the work that each of you are going to commit to doing. Michael has been a great member of the work that the committee does, and I appreciate him staying. I also note that, Andre, your uncle was Earl Johnson. I remember Earl very well. As I recall, he's a highly decorated police officer as well, who was injured in the line of duty. Very well thought of a man, so you come from good stock. We expect good things from you. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you very much. It's very important responsibilities that you're taking on. We appreciate it. Aye. Resolution approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 108?
Oh, Mayor, it's a 10 o'clock time certain. We've got a just 5 minutes to go.
All right. Can you please read the title for
second reading, perhaps? 115?
It's 115, second reading.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's on the consent. I'll see.
Please read the title for item number 128.
And that's a hearing. They're expected at 11:30.
Sorry.
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
This is the usual customary hearing as required by state and local laws regarding sidewalk repair. Is there any discussions or questions from council? Does anyone wish to testify in this matter? If anyone arrives later in the hearing and wishes to testify, we'll accept their testimony as well. Barring that, moves to a second reading. Why don't we do 124? Doing the ones I
amend contract with ESI Acquisitions, Inc. in the amount of $700,500 to provide additional web EOC services.
So part of it was identified out of the top-off exercise some years ago as a lack of interconnectivity on the communication side. So when I took over as an having been a participant in that, when I took over as commissioner in charge of Office of Emergency Management, worked with the Bureau to expand web EOC services to all needed partners. Ms. Merlot.
Thank you, Merlot. Thank you, Mayor. Wow. Okay. Good morning. Thank you, Mayor. I'm Carmen Murillo, the Director of the Office of Emergency Management. First, let me quickly tell you what Web EOC is. Web EOC is a web-based, secure, real-time crisis information management tool that we use across the region. We have three instances in the Portland urban area. We have one in Portland, one in Clackamas County, and one in Clark County, Washington. The instance that Portland hosts also hosts Multnomah County, Columbia County, ODOT, TriMet, The Port, and several other organizations. So what this amendment is doing is three things. One, extending the contract period for an additional 2 years to reach the full 5-year maximum period. It's also establishing a master price agreement so that any of the other agencies that we host and also Clackamas and Clark County may also purchase off of this price agreement. And then third, it's providing additional plug-in software such as what's called Mapper Pro. It's a GIS layer essentially that we can that adds functionality to WebEOC. And it allows for the purchase of additional software and hardware needed to maintain the system for the additional 2 years. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I guess my question relates to the fact that talks about the additional compensation to the provider being 167% increase in the original compensation amount?
It's not just to ESI. What this contract also pays for is a regional WebEOC administrator. WebEOC essentially translates the emergency response into a what's called a board. So they have to translate
to a what?
It's called a board. So imagine a Facebook page. They have to translate how the agency does their emergency response operations and translate that to a process that makes sense on a board, on a web page. So we've hired for the urban area region, not for the city of Portland, what's called a WebEOC administrator that will do that for each of these jurisdictions, including the Port, TriMet, ODOT, and other agencies that we host.
That's who's being compensated.
It's not just that salary. It's all the other things, too. It's the additional maintenance and warranty for 2 years. It's additional software to add functionality to WebEOC. So it's not just the compensation for the regional WebEOC administrator.
Where do the monies come from?
These are all through federal Homeland Security grant funds, specifically through what's called the UASI grant, the Urban Area Security Initiative grant.
Is there any local match required?
No local match required.
And are we required to do this?
We're not required to do this. This is, as the mayor indicated, this is what we felt was needed as a regional crisis information sharing tool. And we use this for any event, real or exercises. We used it during winter storm events, severe warming shelter operations. So we use this on a very daily basis. We have a duty officer protocol. Our duty officers post to this board on a daily basis. So it's not just for use during emergencies.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Any other discussion?
This is a contract then with we're accepting the funds, and then we're contracting with ESI administrators, ESI acquisitions.
That's right. They are the vendor for the product, which is called WebEOC.
Okay. And now there's a not-to-exceed amount of $1.2 million.
Correct.
With the contract with ESI.
Right, which extends the contract for an additional 2-year period. So it'll go through 2013.
And so where, and who pays for the, is the web administrator being paid for in this money too?
The regional WebEOC, yeah. Mark McKay with my office is the local WebEOC administrator.
Okay, thanks.
Additional discussion from council. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on item number 124? Sue, would you please call the vote on item 124?
Fritz.
Thank you for your work. Aye. Thank you.
Fish.
You know, the mayor has the responsibility over this bureau, so he knows what a great job, daily, what a great job Carmen and her team do. But I want to just use this opportunity to thank you for two specific things. One is the severe weather emergency planning. This is our third year. The plan keeps getting better. You convene the stakeholders once again. We've tightened the plan, and we could not do it without your leadership. So thank you on that. And also, you know, following the attempted bombing on the Christmas tree lighting episode, there was some talk in the community about how are we prepared for, you know, a significant event. And I just want to comment that now at least twice in the last 2 years, this council has been asked to participate in a simulated exercise that you've run involving a 6.2 earthquake, which just devastated our community. And, you know, what I've taken from this is that not only do we have a good plan, but we are training and updating it on a regular basis. So people really need to feel confident that in the event something terrible happens in our community, you and your team are prepared to lead us through it. So on both fronts, I just want to compliment you for your good
Thank
work.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
So in addition to the top-off exercise, every time we have a major inclement weather event, and one included where there was local roads were backed up on near a freeway interchange that then backed up the freeway for miles. And the lack of adequate communication, real-time communication capacity in suburban transportation officials, with ODOT officials, with us and other, you know, local transportation operators, made untangling that unnecessarily long, and a lot of people are stuck in their cars for many hours. So what we're doing here today is important. That administrator or translator is important because not all of the electronic equipment throughout the region is able to talk to each other without that human bridge. So you've worked really hard on this. I really appreciate it, and I know that the next time we have some sort of inclement weather, the region will see the difference. So thank you. Aye. Approved. That gets us back to, can you please read the time certain at 10 o'clock, emergency ordinance item number 108.
Ratify a successor labor agreement with the Portland Police Association for terms and conditions of employment of represented employees in the bargaining unit.
By way of introduction, I want to thank the team in the Bureau of Human Resources. I want to thank the Portland Police Association. I want to thank my staff. Everyone has had to be very creative, and everyone has had to make some compromises and also stretch. And what we have before us achieves some very important council-held goals around accountability. Around drug testing, and it also provides and addresses some very real life, legitimate quality of work life concerns by folks in the police bureau. So I'm pleased to bring this before council today for their consideration. Ms. Deckard.
Thank you, Mayor. For the record, my name is Yvonne Deckard. I'm the director for the Bureau of Human Resources. I also have here Steve Heron, who I assigned to be chief spokesperson, and I've invited Daryl to come up since this really was a collaborative effort between the PPA and the city. I think it's appropriate for both of us to be here today.
I want to give Daryl's last name and
I'm sorry, Daryl Turner, PPA president.
Portland Police Association.
He'll be able to speak in a minute, yes.
Okay. PPA.
Portland Police Bureau.
I don't think Daryl's very shy.
All right.
Yeah, he'll take care of it.
Help yourself, Daryl.
Daryl Turner, Portland Police Association President.
To start, we began bargaining in March of 2010, and because of a legal technicality and issue, the city and the PPA stopped negotiations. And we didn't return to the table until about September 17th. By then, the PPA had actually, leadership had turned over, and Daryl and I were able to sit down and really talk about how we get back to the table and resolve the legal issue and get on with the business of negotiations, and we successfully did that. The city, as the mayor mentioned, had some pretty critical issues that we needed to accomplish. Both financial as well as policy issues. On our docket was we needed to adopt and agree to adopt the changes in IPR, which the city council adopted in their entirety. We were interested in developing a random drug testing policy that was comprehensive and that to dovetail with our reasonable suspicion drug testing policy. We had also, during that time, lost a very critical arbitration concerning comp time for extra duty, where the arbitrator awarded PPA members the right to accrue and use comp time at their own discretion without the Bureau's ability to deny the usage or to deny the comp time. The Bureau itself, the chief, has some issues as far as being able to incent veteran officers to work third shift in order to get that experience at very critical times. And so he wanted to see if we could do something with a shift differential for both third and second shift. He also was interested, right now we require an AA degree or 60 college units in order to apply to be police officers. We do not have a four-year degree requirement because of the adverse impact that it has on our ability to recruit, but we wanted to incent officers to continue their educational training and to obtain a four-year degree. And so we were looking at, developing a premium for that. So what we were able to accomplish at the table on the financial end was this is a three-year agreement. There's a zero CPI in year one, which is fiscal year 10-11, and then in years two and three is a CPI with a floor of 1% and a ceiling of 5%, and that's consistent with what we've done with all of our other bargaining units. We were able to actually agree on the IPR changes in its entirety, in which council adopted, and we were able to actually develop a comprehensive random drug testing policy, which is the first for the police bureau and for the city. And the unique piece of this drug policy is that it has a strong treatment first component to it for alcohol and for marijuana. And then we also do retain the ability to, when it's appropriate and when we can do it in a cost-effective way, to do steroid testing. And as it stands right now, with our reasonable suspicion, if we had reason to believe that that was a problem, then we could deal with that through that policy. But it is not a part of our ongoing random drug testing at this time, mainly because there's not a lot of labs that actually test for steroids, and so that technology for us is still in the making, and we can do it, but it would be extremely costly because of the limited labs that are there. We're actually agreed that we would be testing a 660 police officers through our random program a year out of the 914. And so it is a very comprehensive policy compared to our CDL policy, where we only test 400 of our CDL drivers a year under our federal mandate. We actually were able to agree upon the city being able to restrict and suspend police powers, during investigations and in positions of discipline, and that was a big one for us. But the other one that's really critical for us was the coming up with an agreement on having the Bureau to have sole discretion over how to deny and to approve comp time, and to actually make sure that the arbitrator's award did not impact the Bureau, but this gives the Bureau the ability to manage its overtime cost dramatically. And so for that, economically, we actually gave the PPA a 2% across the board, because that was a huge win for them, and they were giving up their ability to use comp time and to earn comp time at their own discretion, and gave sole discretion to the city to actually approve comp time or to counsel comp time once it was on the books. We also, for the third shift, we did a 2% shift differential premium and a 1% shift differential premium for the afternoon shift. The chief was real concerned about the officer's fitness And so as an industry standard, we noticed that a lot of police forces have a fitness premium, and we actually put in a 1% for a fitness premium where officers will be eligible or required to go through a fitness, physical fitness type test. And if they are able to pass, then for that year, they would have a 1% premium. And then for the educational premium, which is also an industry standard, we did a 2% requirement percent for anyone that has a four-year degree, and we hope that that will continue to incent our officers to continue their education and toward a four-year. Right now, we have about 56% of our officers that have a four-year degree, and so there's a lot of work there to be done. I think that those are the highlights. We accomplished a lot more, but those are the real highlights of I think our accomplishments during these negotiations.
I'd like Yvonne for you to elaborate further on the drug testing protocols, specifically what substances will be tested for. You alluded to the frequency of the testing, so. And I think I met with Darrell Turner this morning, so 6% of the officers are tested each month. Is that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, about 6% of the officers will be tested each month or a number of, so of 55 officers a month for a total of 660 a year out of the 914. And we are testing for five drug classes, not actual drugs, because there are a lot of drugs within each classes, which are marijuana, the cocaine, opiates, and amphetamines, PCP. And so those are the drug classes mm-hmm. that we would actually test for.
If there's a positive, there's a confirmation test that would be done?
If there's a positive test, then there will be a confirmation test. And
if that confirmation test also is positive, then there's a treatment option.
Well, if it's an illegal drug, such as the five classes that I just named, if there is a positive in the confirmation test, then we actually move toward discipline. If it's alcohol, if it's marijuana or prescription medication, then we have the ability to have a treatment, program first where the officers can go through treatment. And then if there is a positive after treatment has occurred, then we would move into discipline rather than more treatment.
And it's a prescription drug for which they have a prescription.
Yes, correct. Right. And so any illegal substances would result in discipline, whereas substances that there is a legal nexus to, and maybe we're looking at an officer that has a problem, such as alcohol, then we would actually look at a treatment program.
And so we have the right to test for steroids when we decide we have a cost-effective way to actually do the test.
Correct.
So that's a discretionary power with management at this point.
Correct.
Okay.
Positive test for marijuana would be treated the same as positive test for alcohol.
Correct.
Given the officer the opportunity for treatment.
Yes.
And in the other classes that don't fall under the
mic.
In the other classes that don't include marijuana or alcohol, is the option available for treatment, or are you saying that we would not even provide that option, such as amphetamines?
The option is there, but at that point, it's a management discretion as opposed to an employee right.
Other discussion? Did you want to, Mr. Turner?
Yeah, I just wanted to add in. I just wanted to add in on a treatment first policy. As far as we know, none of the larger agencies in the country have those. So that's a precedent setting along with this random drug testing for the city of Portland. I think that's an important part. I think it's the part we need to monitor closely to make sure that it's adhered to closely. And I think that for us, Portland police officers, we obviously want to help our members that need to reach out for help, but we understand the impact of any member or any police officer in any part of the country that uses illegal street drugs during their duties or on their off time. So it was a large area of controversy during these negotiations, and along with the people next to me here, a lot of people worked hard to explain it to our membership and to the city, to the council members, to make sure that everybody understood it, so that all the myths and misconceptions about drug testing were put aside. So we're happy with it.
Anything you want to add?
No, sir. Thank you.
I guess it's a 3-year contract.
Yes.
And the cost of the contract, the estimated cost?
The estimated cost of the contract is about $5.5 million over the life of the contract.
Over the 3 years?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you all very much. How many people have signed?
We have three people.
Feel free to take a seat if you would. How many?
Three.
Okay.
Would Dan Handelman, Rahsaan Muhammad, and Joanne Bowman come up, please?
Welcome to City Council Chambers. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, no address, and if you represent an organization or you're here to lobby on behalf of anyone else, you just need to declare that. Mr. Handelman.
Oh, hi. Again, I'm still Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and one of the frustrating things about trying to testify on this agenda item is there were really no explicit details included in the City Council agenda item. The proposed contract wasn't attached. It was just kind of a list of individual points that weren't spelled out. And so we just learned the information that you did about the steroid testing and the drug testing. Those questions were raised during the open negotiations, which were terrific, and we really hope that the city will continue them, but that at some point those meetings were closed to the public and those details were hashed out of the public eye. And we're all for a more open and transparent government, especially around police issues, because police, unlike other bureaus in the city, carry guns and have the ability to hurt and kill people. So I'm hoping that we can have more open discussions about these in the future. One of the concerns our organization has had for a long time is the failure for the council to address the parts of the union contract around their rights on being interviewed when they're under suspicion of misconduct, that the Independent Police Review Division does not have the power directly to ask questions to the police officers, and the ordinance that was changed last March gives them the power to ask such questions if the union contract doesn't prohibit it. But the union contract in Chapter 61.2.2 provides that all the interviews of officers shall take place at Portland police stations, and that the officer being interviewed will be informed of the name, rank, and command of the officer in charge of the investigation, the interviewing officer, and person's presence during the interview. In other words, the union contract still prohibits the IPR from compelling officer testimony. The union has reserved the right to object if the IPR tries to subpoena officers, which the new ordinance explicitly says the subpoena power is not for officers. Subpoenaing would mean that they could just claim a Fifth Amendment right, but compelling to testify would mean they'd have to testify or they'd be fired. And we're hoping that maybe this can be worked out before the 3 years of this contract is up and we have to go through this whole thing again. We do appreciate what I guess I would call the Chris Humphreys Clause, which now allows officers to be put on desk duty while they're being investigated. It's interesting that the union marched on City Hall over that issue, and now it looks like it's going to be able to be a city policy. So thank you for that. The Police Review Board that the union apparently has said that they will accept under certain conditions. And again, we're concerned about public policy being made in these contracts behind closed doors. I need to point out that the officers now have the right to sit in during the executive session, but the citizen who filed the complaint doesn't get to attend those hearings at all.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Bowman.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. For the record, I'm Joanne Bowman, and I'm here representing the Albana Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. I also appreciated the opportunity to sit in on most of the union negotiations, and I have to say that I sit here today really disappointed that the city did not work on the public's behalf to ensure that Portland police officers would have an annual evaluation like most working people have. Currently, the union contract Article 59 states, before the city implements a performance evaluation system, it shall discuss the system with the association and will bargain with the association aspects of the system which are mandatory subject of bargaining. However, in all the contract talks I sat in, no one ever mentioned evaluations. I know the previous police commissioner committed to evaluations. The current police commissioner committed to evaluations. Guess what, guys? We're here today. No evaluations. And you're shaking your head, no, Mayor, but it's clear that it's not, unless it's in something I haven't seen. So that's a problem, because the community expects to have police officers understand what their job is and to be evaluated on an annual basis. One of the other concerns that we have is that, again, it seemed, you know, we were told before that there were things we couldn't do because we had to wait till the union contract came up for renewal. When we started this process, we thought this was a two-year contract that we were negotiating, and sometime behind closed doors, it turned to a three-year contract. So I'm here to ask, what is the citizens getting for another $5.5 million? It doesn't appear that we're getting much. The drug testing, while I don't have a strong opinion about testing people just for no reason, just, you know, what do you call that?
Random
drug testing. But what the AMA coalition asked for was that after an incident of force, that police officers be tested so that we could determine whether or not they were on steroids or some other drugs that actually amped up their activity. Sitting here today, I hear that you're not even going to start testing for steroids until sometime when somebody figures out how you test for it, which is not acceptable. So I'm really disappointed sitting here today. I really thought that we were actually on the road to building a contract that the public would have some trust in. But if with no evaluations, no testing for steroids, it seems like this is just business as usual. So I'm done.
We will clarify with staff after.
Thank you. That's a big issue.
Sir,
welcome. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for the process. My name is Rahsaan Muhammad, and I'll be reading a statement from the Fire Fresh Hour campaign. Today, you, the Portland City Council, vote whether or not to approve the recent negotiated Portland Police Association contract. After this year of police killings, you must decide either to reward the PPA and the Portland Police Bureau with both a pay raise and further immunity, or to send a message that Portlanders have lost confidence in the police. We urge you to reject this contract and stand with Portlanders who are tired of mistreatment, abuse, harassment, and murder at the hands of the police. From marching 700 strong, claiming all to be Chris Humphreys, the officer who not only brutally helped murder James Chassie, but who also fired his shotgun at close range on a 12-year-old girl, to closing ranks around officers like Ronald Frashauer, who shot unarmed Portlander Aaron Campbell in the back and killed him, the PPA and the Portland Police have made clear how little they care about our lives and our safety. Portland Police have always expected, and the PPA contract's arbitration provisions have guaranteed blanket immunity for such behavior. This new contract changes nothing. To approve this contract with the arbitration clause intact would guarantee that Portland Police continue harassing and brutalizing members of the community and face no meaningful consequences when they do. The Fire Fresh Hour campaign believes it is time for the City Council to show some backbone and stand up for Portlanders' rights and lives. You must let police officers know that if they beat and murder Portlanders, then at the very least their jobs will be on the line. The refusal to address the arbitration loophole is not just a disappointment, but makes you complicit in any further killings and brutality by the Portland police. Our demands have not gone away. We demand the firing of all killer cops. We demand that all police association contract negotiations be open to the public, and I can stress all. And we demand an end to binding arbitration in the Portland Police Association contract. We can be contacted at firefreshhour@gmail.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony today. Have staff come back up, and the issues of steroids, evaluation, immunity, arbitration clause were raised. So issue of steroids, when the tests become available, we'll be testing. Is that accurate?
Yes.
It's at our discretion.
That is accurate. That is at our discretion. And we have the ability to do it. We just don't have the mechanism right now. There are very few labs in the country that actually does steroid testing. But on the reasonable suspicion piece, if we suspect that an officer is under the influence of drugs, steroids, alcohol, under that reasonable suspicion clause, we have the ability to take action and to test. And so if an incident occurred and we assess that we believe something is wrong with that officer, that they are under the influence of something, we have the ability to take them and test them right then.
Including steroids.
Officer-involved shooting, if we have any reason to believe, any suspicion, it's at our discretion to test.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So we've handled that. Evaluations.
Evaluations is a management right to do, and the police bureau is currently working on evaluations. The only thing that we are obligated to actually negotiate as far as evaluations would be if there's any mandatory subjects that are impacted. And so as a strategy, I directed the team to not compromise our ability to do evaluations and ask the Bureau to work on the evaluation program, and we are working on that with them. And to the extent where the evaluations, depending on what the comprehensive evaluation program is that I'll review and that you, Mayor, will review and that we will be talking to with the council, at that point in which there may or may not be, if there are any mandatory subjects, then we will sit down and we will have that dialogue with the union. The goal here was to try to get a contract to get the IPR things in place that council adopted and to get the drug testing in place without, you know, holding it up. And so the call that I made at that time was that we are working on evaluations. We will get them done. And the other thing I want to remind the council and the public, this is a 3-year deal, but we're halfway through it. And so it won't be that we're not at the table for 3 years. We'll be at the table for in a year and a half in order to that gives us an opportunity to see how the things are working that we have put in place and to address them quickly in the next year and a half.
So can I follow up, Mayor, on that? So, but you, if the contract expires in a year and a half, you'll actually be at the table, I would guess, 11 months.
Correct.
Yeah,
about
that's when you start
that.
Bargaining is
right.
January of the year that expires typically.
Correct, Commissioner.
And on evaluations, I'm glad that that you clarified that, because I want to make clear for people listening. So you could implement an evaluation program that didn't impact what you characterize as mandatory subjects, which includes wages, hours, and working conditions. So
correct.
I want to give you an example that I'm familiar with and see if I understand what that means in terms of evaluating annually police officers. If a supervisor of a represented employee of the PPA were to sit down and simply literally evaluate for that person what their performance was the last year, but it didn't include any chance of the work shift changing or any chance for discipline to occur strictly out of the evaluation, or any chance for the hours of the employee to be altered as a result of the evaluation, it is a permissive subject of bargaining that we don't are not then required to sit down and negotiate with the union over the terms of.
Correct. And I wasn't interested in giving that up.
Right.
by adding it into these negotiations. And so.
So that you didn't include it in the contract is actually a good thing, because it would have acknowledged that it was something that was bargainable.
Right.
Not putting it in the contract was the appropriate thing to do, so you could evaluate without having to bargain.
Correct. Not including it in negotiations.